Hey, everybody. This is Gary Boomershine and Chris Chico for our weekly Tuesday REI Vault Huddle Call. Today is Tuesday, September 22nd, 2015, and happy to have you on the call today. If you're listening to this as a recording, we also welcome you. Let's see, just a couple little notes as normal housekeeping. Always email support at reivault.com. Any technical questions? Chris and I still sometimes get emailed direct, and it's just not efficient because we're then having to forward. We have a 28 people on the team now, doing all the work for all of us, and so quite a few people behind, and there's multiple people involved in every change, every time we're launching campaigns, actually even every lead that gets processed, there are multiple people involved. So just always email support at reivault.com. If you ever have a question regarding a deal that you need some help on, some advice on, what have you, email dealhelp@reivault.com. It goes into a queue, but it actually gets faster to Chris and I and a few others on the team. Couple other things. Let's see. You are probably noticing after every time that you send a request in to support, after 24 hours after it gets closed, you get a survey request asking if you got your answer that you were looking for, needed, and if the support was good, and an opportunity for you to select. You know, were you happy with what answer you had and the service that was provided? In any comments, and we are looking at that. We're measuring the team on that, and we're looking at the response rate and the happiness and the satisfaction and how fast our team is able to get on these questions and change requests that you have. And we got a bonus pool for them on the effectiveness. So we do, we're constantly looking to improve, and we love your feedback, and we want honest feedback. So. I'll leave it at that. If you ever have any recommendations or suggestions, always email suggestionbox@reivault.com. That's actually how we've built everything that we've done. People have made recommendations on things like sending out follow-up letters and one-click offers and all the other things that we've done, the dashboards, et cetera. So, we take that seriously, and we're always looking for feedback. We're looking for contribution from all of us, just like Chris and I are doing our three markets and doing our deals. You know, all of there's an amazing opportunity for all of us to be collaborating, and that's what we're looking at. If you have a question, we're going to open it up in probably about a minute. If you want to press *5 on this call. We'll see that you've raised your hand, and we can bring you in, and you can ask your question, and you can ask whatever you'd like, whether it's related to marketing or your market or real estate deals. Feel free. We encourage any kind of question and dialogue on these calls. And then if we don't have any more calls or any more questions, then we'll just end the call. We'll keep these to less than an hour. With that, Mr. Chico, anything you want to talk about or update?
Yeah, I have actually two things I wanted to mention. Last week, I was at the Collective Genius Mastermind group, and you know, the one thing that stuck in all the various presentations, everybody's presenting on various topics, and not all of them are applicable to us and our business model. But the main thing was that direct mail is still performing overall across the country. However, the big but is that follow-up is even a more of a critical part in the success of direct mail. And yeah, best example would be the property that I saw this morning. After I dropped off my kids, I went to see a deal that we had just were working through and finally got things in order for us to be able to try and sell it. And now this is a deal that potentially we can make about $30,000, so it's a pretty good piece of property. And the deal came from a call that came months ago. Was a hang-up on top of that. And they got, you know, all the follow-up and everything else. We stayed in touch with them, yellow letters, you know, the one-click offer, everything. And so now we, you know, so again, it's yeah, direct mail works. However, the big bug is that follow-up is really, really critical to that equation in order to make that work. And again, this one was the hang-up. So don't ignore the hang-ups because this particular person didn't want to leave a message, and now they're going to turn out to be a really great deal for us. And then the second comment I was going to make, I have a second comment I was going to make unrelated to that, but I'm not sure if you wanted to add to that, Gary, before I mention the second thing.
Yeah, I kind of a bunch of topics on it. I mean, almost all the deals that you and I are getting across the goal line. We picked up another one today. We got closed on a $20,000. It should have been a little bit more, but it was a $20,000 deal that we got paid on yesterday. It closed last week, but we actually got the wire yesterday for $20,000, South Florida. We had two deals last week get across the goal line, and we got wire transfers. But they all came after, I mean, the interaction with the seller, those were coming 4 months, 4 to 6 months after we talked to the original phone conversation with the seller. And we're seeing more and more of that. It's definitely coming. If you just kind of, you know, you're going to get a certain number of deals right away, but the majority are going to come, I think it's the average is 3 to 4 months after you originally talked to the seller. I think just planning for that and not assuming so much on the front end. I mean, we've gotten deals that were dead from the VAs that we were using to talk to the sellers. I mean, they thought that the leads were dead on the first phone conversation. We're seeing a lot of people that are, you know, hang-ups that are getting converted. I mean, the deal that came in today, Chris, you actually showed me it was a hang-up that got followed up on, and it looked like it was a dead deal, that there was nothing there. And then just, you know, staying on top of it, and we have the VAs go back to the phone list, you know, 4, 6, 8, 12 months after the original lead came in and just use it, right? We already got the seller to call. Why send them a postcard if we've got their phone number? You know, we're better off sending out follow-up letters, but just reaching out. We've already built a farm, right? There's only so many properties that have equity in a particular market. And so remember, it's kind of what we would consider kind of a two-step process where you really use the postcard as a low-cost approach to get somebody to pick up the phone, and you get the phone number, and then you use follow-up and phone calls to close up because you do have to build some rapport. The other thing, another really interesting observation, and I've changed my tune a little bit on this. I think it's just, you know, us working and Chris and I interacting with our mastermind and other people around the country. I think if you're making all cash offers, I'm now of the perspective, go ahead and get the property under contract. If you're off on price and the seller, let's say you know you need to be in that property for 120 and the seller just will not spend anything below 150, then put it under contract. What do you got to lose? Put it under contract because what we're seeing is that let's say the seller really hasn't thought much about selling and they're really not that interested. They're lukewarm, right? So they're going to say that they want $180,000 and you need to be at $120,000. Well, what's going to happen? Now all of a sudden you sparked their interest. You did the work. You sent out the money to get them to call you. You sparked their interest in selling. And now they may go online. They may get a couple of other postcards, talk to a couple of other investors. And wow, you know what? They talked to four investors. They realized that your original price was the right price. And so instead of demanding 180, they say, hey, I got somebody else that offered me 120. If you'll come up to 125, it's yours. So you did all the work, and somebody else snagged the deal right out from under you. So I'm of the perspective of get the property under contract so that they're not shopping it around other people. Use it. You'll have a couple of weeks. You do your due diligence, see where you need to be, and then renegotiate with the seller. And I think that's the market right now. And we've got to be more competitive. We've got to be smarter. I had a little bit of a moral and ethical dilemma about that. But you know what? At the end of the day, I think that there is no moral and ethical dilemma. I think be upfront with the seller. And you know, we always let them know that we're going to need to bring our team and see the house and then get back to them. And we haven't had anybody yell at us for dropping the price. The one that we've closed in May, $20,000 yesterday, we had it under contract for 120, and we ended up renegotiating it to 105. So there you go. That's what I got to say about that, Chris. That's all I got to say about that.
So then the second thing I was going to mention is just kind of a book recommendation. I just finished a book called Procrastinate on Purpose by a guy by the name of Rory Vadden, which I thought was insightful. You know, I've read many productivity books. This one is not so tactical in nature, but rather more of a kind of a big picture. You know, we all have a limited amount of focus and time remaining in the day, and so this one helped me make a variety of different distinctions that I didn't before. So it's called Procrastinate on Purpose by Rory Vadden, V-A-D-E-N. And quick read. It took me three sittings, but I was able to read it in three sittings. So so it went fairly fast. So those are the two items on my list.
Okay. Let's see, a couple other things on mine. We finalized and we have the code violation and tax lien list. It's part of the distressed, where Chris and I are calling the shipwreck list. So I wanted to let you know that if you are not using our shipwrecked marketing campaign, it is evictions, divorce, for lease by owner, for sale by owner, estate sales, recently deceased that have equity. So we're pulling that list, and then we actually have to run it again to find maximum combined loan to value of 55% or less, which means it's basically people that are in distress that have equity, and we now have added to that the code violation and tax lien list with the same criteria. So if you want the team to give you a data count, it's not available everywhere in the country, but we've got it. I was looking at where the REI Vault members are at, and I think we're covering about 90% of all of us that are in the group. And so if you want to look at that list, we pull the list. We're sending out a very different marketing set of copy. It's a much more directed set of copy that's branded, and then we drive those calls to Pat Lott that we set up and for everybody and directly into Podio. So if you are not using that yet, a lot of you, I know that there are about 50 people that are already doing that. A small list, it's not going to be a lot of money per month, but I'd recommend it at least for a couple of months. You can email support@reivault.com and say that you'd like to know if the shipwrecked campaign is available in your market and what would that look like, and they'll run data counts for you and give you estimates of what that would look like. Let's see, what else do I have my list? And if you want, you can press *5 if you have a question. We can start bringing you in. A couple other questions. If you have your own marketing list, we have a lot of people now that have their own marketing list as well, and they want to mail. We have finally reached the threshold with our fulfillment house where we're really getting amazing pricing on postcards and other marketing collateral. We're really close to getting the next price break on our handwritten letters, too. It comes down to volume. So right now, with postcards, we're mailing out as a group somewhere between 20 and 25,000 postcards a day across all of us. So if you have your own list, we may be able to send out postcards as low as 37 cents each. So that's really the cost of the postcard. And it may actually even include the transcription with the VA. So it can go up from there depending upon what else needs to happen. We can also set up a live operator. We use Pat Live. So if you're doing bandit signs, or even if you have pay-per-click or anything else and you want that stuff to go into Podio, there is an ability for us to help set up Pat Live for you and set something like that up. We've got a pretty good price break with Pat Live. And we get it all set up in literally about 10 minutes. Most people, it takes a week with Pat Live, but we're able to set it up and go from there. And so if you need that type of service for people that call for your bandit signs or other types of marketing or pay-per-click or anything else you're doing, we can help you with that. Just send an email and you can get more detail. At some point, we'll have some more marketing collateral going out. So with that, I don't have anything else, Chris.
That's it for me.
Okay. So I see a call here coming in from looks like Art. So Art, we'll bring you in. Art, you're alive. Pennsylvania.
Hi guys.
Hey Art.
Hey Art.
Oh shoot. Yeah. Oh well, I'll let it go. Story of my life. Make a bunch of calls, everybody calls back at the same time when you're on the other line. Anyway, I have a question regarding the legality of wholesaling. I know, Chris, you had sent out an email last week regarding how wholesaling and the types of verbiage and what we can and cannot do from the state of Ohio. I was actually aware of that as I had been talking to a lot of people that are plugged into, you know, the real estate investment arena here in Pittsburgh. And I know it's spreading. So my question really comes down to is, you know, obviously I like what I'm doing. Is it going to be advantageous for somebody like me that is actively working this business to get a realtor's license or real estate license? And if so, how would one like myself go about doing that? I'm sure I can contact the real estate office. But my issue is I don't want to work for anybody. Okay, I'm just not cut out to sit in somebody's office and just have to take direction from people. So what kind of feedback would you give me on something like that?
Well, a couple of things is I had sent out, I think you were away, Gary. I posted on my blog some videos that Jeff Watson had done where he interviewed the Ohio Real Estate Commission, and he spoke to them about the, you know, the do's and don'ts of wholesaling and in relation to the law. The couple of things I can think about is actually I had a back and forth with I actually sent Jeff our agreements. He's kind of compiling all a bunch of different agreements and trying to come up with maybe one that he feels is better. He just probably covers all bases, so he's trying to he's kind of working on something in the background there. So as you know more, we'll let you know. But I mean, in terms of I wouldn't necessarily get a license right now. I don't think we're at a point where we need to do that. I think that the two, you know, because also to keep in mind is that whenever you have a real estate license, you're held to a higher level standard. I have a, you know, so by when you're doing any dealings with the general public, right? So if something happens, they'll look to you and kind of say, well, you should have known better because you have a license and you need to operate in a particular way. So for right now, I have a license, but I have it because I was a realtor first. So for right now, I wouldn't worry about getting a license. I would just kind of, you know, keep an eye to the ground to see if you hear anything else. And, you know, the most important thing to walk away, I think, from that interview is that the fact that we are not selling the property. We're selling a contract, and to really communicate with people and be crystal clear about that so that you don't infer in any way that you are selling a property on behalf of someone else, right? Because then at that point, then now you get into that gray area where you could be seen as specifically trying to act as a real estate agent. And so I think that that's the biggest thing is that, you know, you're selling the contract. Yes, there is a house attached to the contract, and so you're able to show the pictures of the house, et cetera. But, you know, really be crystal clear that, hey, you're selling your contract. You're not selling the house because technically you're not the owner. The only ownership that you have is in the actual contract itself. I don't know if you want to comment on that, Gary, but that's kind of my gist. That's what we're doing here differently.
I mean, I think it's a state-by-state basis. You don't want to represent. The word represent from a legal perspective is you're representing, right? And you don't want to represent the seller or present yourself in any fashion other than, you know, you're buying the property. It just happens that you're assigning the contract. And, I mean, I was a licensed agent. I was probably licensed longer than probably anybody that we have in our group. I was licensed from 1987 until 2004. 2003, actually, where a very well-known attorney in the California hired a bunch of attorneys, six of them, and then the feedback was for me in California to get rid of my license because I had no interest in actually working for sellers and holding open houses other than just doing it myself. And so the collaboration of my team said, get rid of the license, of which I did. And, you know, I've got a couple of attorneys that I'm always reviewing, and they're, you know, I meet with them once every 6 months, and they're going through the laws. I don't think, you know, again, it's a state-by-state basis, and I'll give the disclaimer because Chris and I have to, that, you know, we're not attorneys, and we're not giving any legal advice, but I don't think you need it. And if it does come down to a point where the law is very clear in your state that you can't do that, then you do need to change. And I think that there's lots of ways to change. I mean, the foreclosure, when I was buying a lot of foreclosure properties, and there were crazy, crazy laws in California. Everybody said that you couldn't actually buy a house because of 1695 and 2495 of the California Civil Code. And then I went and shepherded the law and found out as long as I had these things in my contract, I was fine. So, you know, my take to you, Art, again, you're in an area that we don't have any legal expertise, which is Pennsylvania. But I think it's a great thing to scare people away, right, and get them out of the business. And that's part of the goal. I mean, even like, I hate to say this, but they're like the law, or everything that you do during the day, we're breaking the law every day of the year of some law, right? There's 3,000 different codes for cheese on the processing of cheese in the United States. Somebody's breaking the law every single day. So, you know, my take is I don't think you need a real estate license. I think that's noise and a distraction. I think that you got to be very watchful for your language and what you say. We've talked about this with you specifically in the past, where you don't want to be representing, you know, you're not representing a seller. You need to be buying real estate. That's what we do. And you may decide once you have a contract that you're going to sell that contract. You're signing that contract. That's what you're doing. It's contract law. And I actually personally, again, this is a personal belief, with lots of time looking at the USC and the Uniform Commercial Code, and which I've done, believe it or not, and I've actually bought Rules of Civil Procedure, and I went through that book from page 1 to like page 400 years ago because I was interested in all the laws. And I think the contract law of how this works, I don't think that really can force somebody to hold a real estate license in Ohio. I think that contract law allows contracts to be assignable, and most of the states actually, you don't even have to put and or signed in the contract. There's only like 4 or 5 states, I believe, that you have to do that. So again, that's my personal perspective, and I'm not an attorney, but I don't think you have to get a real estate license. I think you just need to make sure that you are, you know, following the guidelines of the law, and also of the Department of Real Estate in your state. And as you grow and get bigger, you should plan a certain amount of money for legal. I have a really good real estate attorney, and Kevin Eikenberry, and he's one of the guys that I have kind of, you know, I've given him a lot of money and a lot of referrals. And he said, at the end of the day, anybody can sue. Anybody can come after you for anything. That's just the way the legal system works in our country. And, and part of it is how much money do you want to spend to defend yourself? You know, if you're doing this business long enough, you are going to get sued. And, it's in any business. So, you know, again, if you're going to have to take your personal perspective, I don't think there's anything wrong with what we're doing in wholesaling. And I think the laws are going to get tighter and tighter. They always seem to go after the wrong people, the little guy. But, you know, with that said, be very watchful for what you say to the sellers. And if you come in there and you are representing that you're going to basically represent them and find other people that are going to buy the house, to me, that sounds like a realtor. So you need to be very specific that you're buying the house, and what you do behind the scenes in terms of possibly shopping that contract with other rehabbers is your business, and as long as you're following the law. So that's my take. I don't think you need a real estate license. I think it's a distraction, and I think you put yourself in a totally different level of accountability. I mean, California, if I told you what I have to do in California if I'm licensed doing this business, it's ridiculous, you know? And by the way, most of the people that are going to complain against you are other realtors. If not even sellers, it's usually other realtors that are wanting to come after you because they're highly competitive and they're territorial. So that's what we've seen also. People that complain are realtors.
So, in my marketing efforts to get my property sold, I am putting them up on Craigslist, Postlist, you know, all that, and just, you know, kind of blasting it out as well as to my investor base. So my take on, I mean, I know I'm okay with my investor base, okay, but when I'm putting it out on Craigslist and Postlist, I'm also, my verbiage on my ad is, you know, motivated, motivated seller that wants out of the rental business, I'm putting it in the for sale by owner.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds fine to me.
Well, you could
saying,
do it. I think
saying,
what you're saying.
Here's an example of one of my ads. It's a motivated owner wants out of rental business. It's a great rental property with good potential income. Solid property needs some TLC. Email me, and I'll give you the address. Even more details about the property. Phone. It's a tremendous deal, so email me again about the post. And then I have photos. Now, my take on that interview was because I'm selling a contract, I'm not allowed to show photos. So, and I don't know, maybe I'm just overthinking this, overreacting to it, but I want to be proactive because I really like what I'm doing, and I don't want to get my tit in a ringer, period.
The two things I would say is that I think from what I gathered, or maybe it was that from somewhere else that I got further clarity, was that, I mean, you know, if you're setting the contract, then you have to show them the property that's attached to the contract. So you're showing them the pictures because they're part of the contract you're selling. You know, somebody can't buy the contract without seeing what the attachment what's attached to that contract. So I wouldn't worry about that. The other thing you could do is on your when you reply back to someone, and you could have a little disclaimer at the bottom of your email, and or you could have if you're sending them to a website, you could have something on the website. So one of the things that we do is that we have a website, and it just says, hey, you know, on a website it kind of has an FAQ. We say we're selling a contract to the property, and so we're clear about that. So I would just, you know, you could just disclose it to someone. But I think for the purposes of posting it on the site, I would just post them. But, you know, when you finally do reply back to someone, just maybe make that representation to them that you are selling the contract. And if it is someone that isn't an experienced investor or somebody who knows the game, then they're not going to have an issue with it. Typically, people that will have an issue with it are typically people that we are not going to want to deal with as a buyer.
Yeah. Now, I when I get calls from people, I'm very specific about what I do. The way I respond to them is I tell them, you know, sometimes they think I'm the owner of the property. I clarify that right away. I say, look, I am not the owner of the property. I'm a wholesaler that has purchased the property with a contract from the seller, from the owner of the property, and I'm looking you know.
Well, you can't. Technically, that's not accurate. You haven't purchased it. You're the owner.
I have a
contract. You're actually,
yeah.
You have a contract on the property, and you're selling, and you're looking to sell your interest on, you know, which is your contract, for someone who's interested. I mean, really, that's.
Okay.
To me, I think you're fine with that.
Yeah, and you could even say that you get a lot of properties. You have a lot of properties, and some properties that you close on, and some properties you are giving to other people at a really amazing discount, and leave it at that. So,
okay.
I don't think you should put a wholesaler. I mean, again, you're really, who's going to be turning you in, and who's going to be like beating you up? Are they going to be realtors? They're not sellers. The seller wants to sell to you. They want to sell the house, and they don't want the hassle. And we're good for that. The overall market. It's going to be a realtor that, or somebody else that wants to snag the deal because they're feeling jealous and they've got a scarcity mentality. So just, you know.
Yeah. Don't use the word wholesaler.
And if you're really concerned, you know, which, you know, you should as you start growing and you're doing a ton of deals, is you make sure that you got a good real estate investor friendly attorney. You know, you send us an email, we can see if we can find you an attorney in Pennsylvania that some of the other guys that are doing a lot of deals in Pennsylvania. Maybe Greg has a, you know, Greg does a ton of wholesaling. Maybe we could find an attorney contact. You know, somebody just to review your wording and just make sure that you're kind of in compliance.
Okay. Is that I have been using the contract in REI Vault. I have had it reviewed by the president of the REI here in Pittsburgh, and everything complies, you know, with the laws here in Pennsylvania. So my contract is good. The only thing that I was doing that should have been changed was I wasn't putting it in my company name. I was putting my name on that contract. So that was something that I'm going to change going forward. And then the other thing that he said was to incorporate in the state of Nevada, because he said something about the veil was hard, can't pierce their veil or something like that, which I didn't quite understand. But I just, my take on it was it's hard to sue somebody that's incorporated in Nevada.
Yeah, or Wyoming. I'd go Wyoming because it's cheaper. Nevada has actually gotten a lot more expensive for the incorporation and the annual fees. So personally, I would do Wyoming. All my stuff is in Nevada. I have the foreign file, so I'm in California. I'm in probably the most ridiculously liberal, ridiculous rural state in the country, where the foreclosure laws were passed in the 90s. Right, and so all the laws are typically followed out of California, and so I'm constantly watching art, probably more than anybody. I've done a ton of creative deals and a ton of lending, and I've had lawsuits. I've had to sue the seller, and you know, I've had to deal with the legal process. So I'm crazy meticulous on contracts, and by the way, I ended up suing on a predatory deal where a seller wasn't. I had to sue them, and I won. I was the one deal, and I won very, very well in court, and everything that I did held up. You know, all the way down to when I get a copy, like when I do, you know, little tiny things. When I'm actually in California and on my deposit, I don't actually give the seller a check. Like a lot of states, the contract can be consideration, right? But if I do $100, I actually give, or $1,000, I actually give that in cash to the seller. I have them endorse the check. It says received for cash, and I have them sign it on the check, and I use that as my receipt. So I'm crazy, you know, meticulous from the legal perspective. And I was playing in the foreclosure space. That's why, you know, I don't think you have anything really to worry about. As you start doing a lot more deals, you should have somebody on your attorney team. And eventually, you're going to have a suit. You just have to realize somebody's in the studio, and that's why we're always, you know, you don't going into a legal battle. It doesn't matter whether you're totally, completely the best dude in town, and you got a meticulous track record. None of that matters when it comes to court. It's really a toss of the coin, and how much money you have to battle. So it's always better to do everything. You know, make your sellers happy, have good relationships. If they really want to get out of the contract, let them out of the contract. Go after more stuff. But I don't think you have anything really to worry about. Don't put the address of the property on Craigslist. If you're worried about the pictures, you know, you still have to have pictures. Pictures are important on Craigslist. People don't respond without pictures. So put another picture. Go take some pictures of some crappy houses in Pennsylvania. And have a whole plethora of crappy house, you know, pictures of rundown, dog pile, burned out houses, and use those. Then you don't have to worry about the picture. If you're worried about the picture and you don't want to spend the money for the $500 to an attorney, then put some other junky picture. It's marketing, right? You just want somebody to have the calls. At the end of the day, you're going to call that buyer and give them something for them to go out to the house anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. That's a great idea.
So there's lots of workaround. And but don't allow, you know, there's always going to be more laws. They don't remove laws, right?
Every year they add
more laws.
Yeah.
So, and it's getting more, it's tighter and tighter and tighter. And, you know, the little guild that they all work in, they call the bar, you know, it's a private club, and they're in it for making money. So, anyway, that's my take.
I'm just going to make one last comment. I wouldn't use the term wholesaling. The reason why, a wholesaler, I just call yourself a real estate investor. And, so don't use wholesaler, because what happens is that the Ohio State, they specifically use that term as a negative term, right? So if they tell the realtors, hey, you got to watch out for those wholesalers, the wholesaler, then you use that same term, then now you kind of are jumbled in there. And most people don't understand the term, depending on who you're talking to. So I would just say you're a real estate investor, I have a contract, and I'm looking to sell the contract. So that's the last thing I'll say on that.
Yeah, if somebody's looking for a promotion in government, right, some DA is looking to be promoted and get to be a judge or something, they're going to say, hey, let's go after this particular. Like in California, they created a sting operation, massive amount of money. For predatory lending. I mean, millions and millions of dollars went in for this, and so they hired a bunch of people. And what do? They're going to go, if they wanted to do that in Pennsylvania, they're going to say, oh, let's just go type search words for wholesalers and build a list. And then if you have your name on a bunch of stuff as a wholesaler, they're going to come after you. And if you don't have a ton of money to defend yourself, you're going to settle, right? So don't put wholesaler on your web stuff.
So we got a couple of other calls, actually, waiting. I think we covered this pretty well.
Helpful? Art, is that helpful?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I appreciate the feedback, and, you know, I'll change my verbiage. I am now a real estate investor.
Yeah, you get yin and yang with Chris and I. You may like Chris's response, or you may like mine more. If designed, if we come from a different perspective.
Go ahead, Gary.
Days ago. Art as well, right? Was that helpful?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right, let's bring Henry.
For the,
Henry.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Chris. What do you?
I was going to say, for the record, Art always likes my responses better. I just want to say you used the word if, and I wanted to correct that. Okay.
I know, Art. When I see your emails come in and they say Chris, I want Chris and Gary. It's like when I see it says Chris, it's like, man, Art doesn't like my response. He's a long-winded guy. That's Art. No, I'm just kidding, Art. All right. So I take no offense to anything. I am long-winded. Okay, Henry, you are live. What's happening, Henry?
Not much. How you doing?
Good,
Henry. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. Just had a couple questions. The first one's kind of more towards Gary. I think we spoke in the past. You were saying that maybe you guys would have the ability to add in kind of more custom marketing pieces. Like I mentioned, I used some stuff with Go Print In with kind of like the glossy, more branded type postcards. Is that anything in the works?
Yep. What do you, well, We just did a glossy one. We actually tested a glossy one, and it didn't produce real well. It wasn't produced by us, and it looked amazing. And we did it. It was a small split test, but it actually, the results were half the response. Same type of message. It was much more pre-qualifying, right? It wasn't designed to get the seller to just call. It was designed to tell them specifically what we wanted to buy the house at a discount. We do have some new marketing stuff. I've been talking about it. If you're interested, you should just send an email to support and have one of the members of the team show you a couple of things, or set up an account review with me, and we can walk through what you're trying to do.
Okay. I
know the marketing piece that you've been using with some success, Henry, for a long time. You designed it, and we do have another piece that I think that you should test in your market that I think that you'll be very happy with. So just drop an email to support@reivault.com, and the team will know exactly what I'm talking about. There's some handwritten stuff that we've done. The results are mixed. We did some campaigns for really, I mean, it looked amazing. But it didn't work. It didn't work real well. We did it in three different markets. So, but there is one piece that I think would be really good for you. And as we get a little bit more traction, we'll be rolling it out for other people around the country. And we got a couple of guys that are mailing it with, you know, 40 to 50,000 pieces a month. So we're getting good data on it. That makes sense. And then if you have some other stuff that you want to test, we can always do that. We can mail pretty much anything. In color, postcard, white, yellow, pink, purple, you know, black with white lettering. You can do whatever we want. But we can definitely give you the early results because we have tested. I think we're at 20, almost 22 million pieces mailed to date since 2005. And the last thing, Henry, we are compiling all the data into a dashboard. We got a group actually working so we can see the performance of all that stuff. Chris and I, our goal is to be able to have like a monthly review and just trending of what we're seeing. And, you know, like we did some testing again. We haven't done this in a few years, but adding a website and adding an email address and seeing what the results are. And also testing the website of how many people actually hit the website and opt in or not opt in. And we got some early data on that, so don't ever put a website on. That's new.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, you know how to schedule an appointment with me, right? It's reivault.com/review, and we can schedule a time to go through all this, too.
Okay, yeah, that would be helpful.
Awesome. Anything else?
Yeah, just another question. I was just doing well with the absentee list, and I started the shipwreck list, but what other lists are people using kind of across the country that they're having success with? You know, if I just wanted to diversify a little bit.
Yeah, the one that you've been doing for a while, which is Kent Clothier's Find Motivated Sellers Now. We're seeing good results off of that, and we're seeing some not-so-good results off of that, but primarily it's totally a kind of a county-by-county basis. And I think it has to do with the number of people that are mailing that same list. So that works. That's the vacant property, vacant high equity owner list. And we can get that for everybody too. We have we're very close with Kent. Kent actually gave us the way that he pulls the data. So if anybody wants to mail the vacant list, we can actually get that for you. You have to be a member of Kent Clothier, Find Motivated Seller, and we can hook you up with him and get that list for you, and then we can mail those postcards for as little as 37 cents. The cost of the list is where the price is. But I think Kent charges like $1,000 or $1,500 for access to his list for a year or for lifetime value or something like that, and then you can pull as much as you want. Our team can actually pull that list. That's one. U.S. lead list with Lance and Terry and other people a lot. So that's a hit or miss too, and we do a lot of mailing for people that pull the U.S. lead list. We've seen our list has a little bit of crossover. The list that we're currently mailing will probably have some overlap that we're already mailing because we're pulling the inherited list anyway. And then the shipwreck list is a good one. When I say the shipwreck list is actually three different lists that we're pulling. We pull three different lists, and then we have to take that list and run it through again to get the equity. And so that's if anybody's – and we also have probate. So if you want us to mail the probate list, we've got a probate provider that we've tapped into nationally, so we can pull a probate list. We don't know the equity of the property, but we do know that there's a property, so we can mail probate. We typically would recommend that we mail that every 14 days, five times, and then we pull the new list. Is that helpful, Henry? Those are the main lists. We're not doing a ton in foreclosure. By the way, the shipwreck list, we do pull foreclosure in most states if it's a longer foreclosure cycle, but it's only with equity. So I'll go into a little bit more detail. If we were to pull the list unfiltered with equity in your market, right, you're in Missouri, in your particular county, if we pulled our shipwreck list, it would probably have somewhere between 4,000 and 10,000 names on it, okay? Got it? When we pull the equity piece, it takes it from 4,000 to 10,000 down to 400 to 1,000 because 90% of that stuff is all over-leveraged junk if we're most of us are trying to buy equity deals. But if people are trying to buy subject to and they don't mind taking over a leveraged property or slightly leveraged, then it's a pretty massive list.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chris, anything else? I don't know what else to get. I'm testing a new one. I'll tell you, a new list. I'm actually pulling a list from the Department of Motor Vehicles. And tell me what you think of this. Chris, I haven't even mentioned this to you, but I'm working with Karen in Colorado on this. So we're going out, we're pulling people, older people that are 72 or 75 years of age, that bought a motorhome or a trailer or some sort of SUV type of trailer, whatever they call fifth wheel, and they bought between certain years, and then we're going to put a very different postcard to that list. And what we're looking for possibly older people that have bought motorhomes that actually would also own houses and they're downsizing or recently deceased, to see if we can get some action on that. For the house. So I'll let you know in 2 months how that works because we're pulling that right now and testing it.
Interesting.
And by the way, I'm trying to buy a motorhome, a big motorhome. So it's a double whammy for me. Want to buy a house? My goal is to buy a house and get a motorhome for free. That's my goal. But I have a very specific message, and if it works, then we'll discuss rolling it out to see whoever else wants it. All right. Anything else, Henry?
No, that's it. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. You got a question? Go ahead and put up your press star 5.
I think Justin. Here we have Justin. Did you raise your hand? Yeah, that was Justin. You want to do it, Gary?
Mine's not refreshing. Hold on real quick. Let me see.
We're all selected.
Yeah, go ahead. Bring
Justin Lee.
Hey, guys.
From sunny British Columbia.
Yes. So I have a few things here, fairly quick questions. Number one, Gary, the shipwreck list, is that the one that we have already tested in San Diego, or is that something different? That's a smaller list where we only had like 300 records.
Yeah, you tested half of it. So the list that we have added to it is code violations and tax liens.
Okay. My next question has to pertain to the contract. So kudos to you guys. I love your contract. It makes it so brain dead simple. I've seen so many boneheaded assignment ones. But one thing that is not in there that has come up with at least the last two buyers that I have, and I sort of talked them through it and we had to write it in there, was you guys cover what happens if you can't get marketable title and you get the deposit back. There's nothing in there that says, hey, if I put in my deposit and the seller goes AWOL or gets hit by a bus or refuses to sign the docs, that I get my deposit back. Is that something that we could maybe get formally inserted in there as a clause, or am I my own on that, or?
Hold on.
So
basically, just
saying,
if seller does not perform.
Oh, in other words, would you get the deposit back?
Yeah, like I'm not going to keep somebody. If the seller goes out and gets hit by a bus, or if the seller chickens out at the last minute, I'm not going to hold some dude's deposit if I'm assigning the contract. I'm going to give him back his deposit. Like, that's not his fault or my fault.
Well, that would be on the assignment of contract then, not on the seller's, right?
No. I make my cash buyer give me a non-refundable deposit on every deal to tie it up.
Mm-hmm.
And his concern, and I've had this with the last two cash buyers, and I sort of talked through it, and we might have cleared it up, was, hey, what happens if your buyer, if the seller, Justin, backs out and doesn't come to the closing table? Or what happens if, you know, give you a ridiculous example, this seller gets hit by a bus tomorrow? Are you going to keep my deposit, Justin?
Right,
and the answer is obviously.
Justin, write up a simple addendum. An addendum to the assignment agreement, right? If you send me an email, I can write a sample for you. But I would write up an addendum and have that with you going forward, and have that as an, don't add it, don't create, right? Don't fix something that you don't have a problem with, but have an addendum. And the addendum would basically say, and you could point out the fact that in the purchase agreement, you're covered, right? If the seller can't sell, they can't keep, they have to return the deposit. So you could really point that out at that, you know, in that event that you'll return the deposit in that particular case under bullet point number 6, right? And then have that as an addendum that you can assign to solve the objection and be done with it. But don't add that to the assignment. Don't create the noise. I would do it in the case that they ask the question.
Got it. Okay. My next question is, I believe that as an affiliate a year or two ago, I was given access to the Find Motivated Sellers. Now, what do you guys need? Just my username and password?
Yeah. Send an email. Send an email and tell them that you want us to start pulling that list. And the team knows specifically how to pull it. Actually, Kent Clothier provided some very specific instructions on how to pull his list the way he would do it. That's worked for him in San Diego, by the way, and in other markets. And so you can just.
So I might not want to pull this list right now if he's done it recently.
No, he's not marketing it. He just said, go ahead and for all the Lazari eyeballs. We're very close. And we brought him on as an advisor. And so we had him and his team kind of demo it and show us. So yeah, you could just give it to us. I would mail it. He did it. He just hasn't been. He's been super busy.
Okay.
All some other stuff.
And when are we officially down to 37 cents? And for what mail is that?
You know, it's a Chinese menu. The problem is that it, you know, like if you want to add Pat Live, it's 5 cents extra per postcard for the most part. All right, because it's $80 a month with Pat Live, and based on the response rate, and they give us 50 minutes, it works out to 5 cents a postcard. So it depends on if you're giving us your list, and the basic, somewhat quick answer is the postcard is really about 37 cents. All right, the black and white on white paper. Et cetera. And then it's typically like one extra penny for the phone. So when we actually put an 800 number on there, we have to cover the cost of the phone. It works out $5 a month for the phone number, 4.5 cents a minute. You take all the, it works out to a penny. The transcription of the message, right, that comes in, is usually a couple of cents to cover the cost of that. Make sense? And then the
okay.
So we,
okay.
If you, the little piece I told you we should mail, it has color on it. The printer actually has to use a totally different printing press. We have to mail a minimum of 12,000 per run, which we're doing, but 12,000 per run, and they charge us a couple of extra pennies. So it can go from 37 cents up to, you know, 42 cents or 49 cents, depending. And so I can't give you a quick answer. If you tell us the list, we come back and tell you what it is.
That's fine. My last.
I think click-to-mail is 42 cents to do the same. So we're probably 4, 5, or 6 cents left.
Okay. My last question is, I know that Gary, you and I have talked offline a little bit about pay-per-click lately, and I'm chatting with somebody today about pay-per-click. I think I mentioned this to you. Do you have a handful of questions that while I talk to this guy today for the first time that you would like me to ask him to know if I'm going down the path of something that's going to work and integrate with Podio and you guys or be a disaster?
Are you talking about Trevor?
Trevor's guy, yeah.
Yeah, I would talk with Chris. Chris is probably a better, because they're good friends and know it. I mean, really, I would ask for referrals and find out what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
A couple of people at Kari Evolve that are actually doing it. So I'd get some of the other people. I would find out what their cost per click and their cost per lead is. With real metrics.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. So,
okay, and CPC and CPL, and then base that by market, right? Like, so all, not all markets
yeah.
are even, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
You want to find a similar market. So it's typically, like, we're in a hot market on the coastal areas right now. So if
yeah.
they're in the center of the country, it's a totally different thing. Right? If you're able
okay.
to get $175 or less per viable lead, if somebody fills that out, that's probably where you're going to be. And then,
okay.
They already do it in real estate niche, but typically it's like, have you done local search? And in the real estate niche, right? And
yeah.
The Podio stuff, you know, we can help you. We're better off possibly giving them the Podio link. If you want to do that down the road, I'm not sure we will, but there's actually some Podio code that can get the leads into Podio.
Okay.
Chris, you want to add anything else? What else would I say?
I would just say that what you just said, the cost per lead, cost per click, cost per lead. And I guess, you know, if they have a few different people that they're working with, they should be able to, that number will vary depending on the market. So in a highly competitive market, the numbers, so I would say, you know, see if they can give you a numbers based on your market. And obviously you're going to be in a competitive market. But
right.
I would just try to get those stats or whatever numbers that they have, and then we can kind of cross-reference with some of the numbers that we know and see if they match or not, or if they are horrible or pretty good.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, Justin, the other thing is just get something up and running for you and test it. The biggest thing is you get leads for the money, right? Spend $3,000 or whatever and over 2 months and see if it works. And then have those leads. We can just send those leads into Podio. That would be the easiest thing. We'll
yes.
give you the email address of where to send those. Set that up for you.
Okay. Okay, I think I'm good. I think the one thing I learned in my corporate America days was they taught me you praise in public and you criticize in private. So, Gary, I will save all my ranting and ravings and ball busting for when we have lunch on Friday. That was a joke.
Hey, no, I know.
I hope everyone knows it's a joke.
No, it's all good, brother. I got your email. I like your, like, hey, can you bitch slap the... I liked your email today. Can you get those VAs working?
I said crack the whip, I believe.
I know. Oh, good. All right.
Okay, thanks, guys. No, I'm good. I'll see you Friday.
All right. Chris, anything else? I'm not looking at...
No, that's it. Nothing on my end.
Okay. Good. All right, everybody. Great. Thanks for the interaction, and hope you got some value out of today, and we'll talk to you next week. Good.
Perfect.
Selling.
Thanks, everybody.
Go make some money. See ya.
Of the other call.